My guest this evening is Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park Artistic Director Blake Robison. He's been busy readying the Playhouse's upcoming production of Peter and the Starcatcher, the winner of 5 Tony Awards in 2012. It's an adaptation for the stage of a novel by Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson, and it's a story about the origins of Peter Pan that's sort of, but not entirely familiar. So, Blake, where did this all come from? What's the origin behind the play and the story?
Well, as you said, it's based not just on a single novel, but a series of young adult novels by Ridley Pearson and Dave Barry, and that was turned into a play with music by Rick Ellis, who some people will know as the book writer for Jersey Boys, a big Broadway hit. It started off in a small, very hip off-Broadway theater called New York Theater Workshop. It was very successful, moved to Broadway, a commercial run, a tour, and we've been interested in it since the very beginning because it fits so wonderfully with what we're trying to do at the Playhouse. We want to have a few productions every year in addition to our annual production of Christmas Carol, to which you can bring younger folks in your life, teens, kids, grandkids, nieces, nephews. This is a full family theater experience. It is fun for the kids. There's a lot of comedy and physicality to it. But the script is, in fact, quite sophisticated, very verbally adept, a lot of clever witticisms, and even a few saucy jokes that'll go right over the heads of some of the younger audience members.
I read something that suggested that where it ultimately came from, the inspiration for it was Pearson talking to his 5-year-old daughter, and she said, "How did Peter Pan meet Captain Hook?"
I've read that interview, and I find that very likely, fact. One of the fun things about any prequel is that you learn some of those early stories that someone went and reimagined. So in this case, you learn how Peter became Pan. You learn where Captain Hook came from. How did those Lost Boys get on the island anyway? Where does Tinkerbell come from? All of these things are revealed in wonderfully imaginative and creative ways over the course of the 2-hour play.
Well, let me ask you that, because when you describe that, it sounds like, wow, there must be all kinds of special effects and crazy staging and things like that. But that's not really quite the way this one is put together, is it?
No, it's not, because this is all about the power of storytelling. And one of the things I most love about this script is that it's not based on special effects. It's based on actor power. The imaginative leaps that a wonderful piece of theater can give to an audience. So rather than have a dozen different sets and lots of flashy special effects, you have actors manipulating props. We take a few simple elements, some crates, some barrels, some ropes, some sails, some sticks, and out of that, we create an entire world that sparks the audience's imagination so they can see it for themselves in a way that only theater can.
I read the New York Times review of the Broadway production, and Ben Brantley talked about how, well, sure, we've seen people fly and Mary Poppins and all this sort of thing. He said, but you'll really believe in flying when you watch this one because of the imagination that's engaged behind it.
I think that's exactly right. And I can tell you the report from the rehearsal room is exactly that. Sometimes I wish I could bring people in, 10 people at a time, just to watch the rehearsal room before we add all the sets and costumes, because there's a great sense of wonder and energy and love and sincerity coming through the actors in the context of this story.
Storytelling really is the core of all of this. And having read the script, it feels like it must be sort of a pell-mell process. Someone that I read writing about it described it as locomotive storytelling.
Oh, boy, I got to tell you, the first time I read the script, and I had already seen the production, but I got the script in front of me, and even I, who do a lot of theater, said, oh, my gosh, how the heck are we going to pull this off? There are so many imaginative leaps that you must make.
And it doesn't really tell you how to do them.
But of course, that's the fun of it as a director. You don't want to copy somebody else's production. You want to just get in the room with your 12 actors and say, okay, how are we going to make this one happen?
Sort of a playground, isn't it?
It is a playground. It's very much, we've likened it in rehearsal to what my 9-year-old child does in the basement with his buddies. They have a sword fight with Nerf swords, or they turn pillows into a fort, and then they change that into an island, and then it becomes a race car. You know, whatever it is, you just say go, and everyone gets on board with that imaginative act.
You said when you started talking about this that this represents a category of theater that you are trying to regularly inject into Playhouse seasons. We're coming up on your 4th season. We're about midway through your 3rd season. It strikes me this one is an especially good example of that sort of thing. Can you talk a little bit more about what it is you look for and what you found in a play like Peter and the Starcatcher that really fulfills that?
finding a good piece of family theater is extremely difficult because we're not trying to do children's theater. This is not Three Billy Goats Gruff or Sleeping Beauty or something like that. I liken a good cross-generational play to a Pixar movie. In that, kids can come and enjoy it on one level, but it has a level of sophistication to the writing and the storytelling such that adults can come, even if they don't have a little munchkin in their life, and enjoy it as well. We're trying to target people who are in the 8 to 18 zone. So it's not the youngest kids in your household, but it's kids who are sophisticated enough to sit through 2 hours of very lively storytelling, not get bored, and enjoy that live interaction that you get in the theater. Pull the kids away from the screens a little bit and get them back in touch with that fundamental storytelling that we did before television and the internet even existed.
I'm a long way from the age range that you describe, but I found myself laughing out loud just reading the script, so I can only imagine that seeing it live on stage is going to be just a blast.
I have had more fun working on this play than I can remember. The level of corpsing, we call it in the theater, when actors start laughing out loud, like used to happen on the Carol Burnett Show, is just constant. It's unusual for us to get through an entire run of the play without everybody busting out laughing.
There is a lot of, I guess we could call it low humor in this. There are fart jokes and all sorts of things like that. You might think are sort of childish if you just heard me just say that, but I think listening to them and seeing them on stage, people will just have a hard time containing themselves.
You do have to go with it. There's a little highbrow and a little lowbrow to it, but that's its appeal. That is exactly its cross-generational appeal.
Perhaps the greatest proponent of all this in the show is a character called the Black Stash.
Yes.
I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about him.
The Black Stash is a fantastical pirate who never got out of the pirate business. He says during the show, when everybody else got out of the pirate business, the Stash stuck it out. And so now he is the most fantastic pirate on the planet, very, very full of himself, not unlike Captain Jack Sparrow from the Johnny Depp Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
He also fancies himself to be quite the articulate poet about things.
Yes, he's fond of making rhymes and speaking in verse on occasion, but they're fun nursery rhymes and always have something to do with his attempt to conquer the world. What Black Stash is really looking for is a hero, and this goes back to the prequel aspect of it. He's a successful pirate, but in order to be the best villain in Neverland, he has to have a hero with whom he can combat. And Peter's journey through the play, in one respect, is his evolution into the heroic foil for Black Stash.
And Black Stash, by the way, delivers more malapropisms than one can really shake a stick at.
Yeah, and they're good malapropisms, too. You know, you go to some of those old Restoration plays, and they're supposed to be funny, but nobody's really laughing. I mean, these are funny, funny contemporary jokes.
And I'm glad you mentioned the evolution of Peter. In fact, when the play begins, he doesn't even have a name. He's just the boy.
He's boy. He's an orphan boy. The emotional through line to the story, in addition to the pirate aspect of the story, is the journey from adolescence into young adulthood. That happens with Peter as he gets a name and goes on his journey to become eventually Peter Pan. And that is balanced by another character, a young woman who's also 13 years old, named Molly. Molly is a young woman trying to become an adult. They meet each other. They have an immediate curiosity, fascination about each other, which doesn't grow into full-blown romance, but they grapple with all of those feelings that young adults have. So I think it's accessible in an emotionally rich way as well.
In all of these many storylines and characters, as the play draws to a close, you begin to recognize as, oh, that's where that one came from, and that's how that fits in.
Yes.
So it's great fun. Even, again, as an adult, especially adults of, well, my generation, perhaps yours, who saw some of the musical on television and that sort of thing, we know the story, but where did those people come from? Well, you'll get to know that when you watch this show.
You absolutely will.
Cincinnati Playhouse's production of Peter and the Starcatcher is in previews this weekend, and it opens next Thursday and continues through April the 4th. The Playhouse is offering a spring break special for selected performances from March 29th through April 2nd, enabling you to purchase one or two half-price children's tickets when you buy one regular-price adult ticket. For more information about this offer and other performances of Peter and the Starcatcher, follow the link that you'll find at WVXU.org. My guest this evening has been Blake Robison, Artistic Director at the Cincinnati Playhouse and Director of Peter and the Starcatcher, who I suspect is really just a big kid himself.
Oh, you found me out, Rick.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
For Around Cincinnati, I'm Rick Penner.